Understood is a resource I have recommended for many years to parents looking for support with learning and thinking differences such as ADHD, dyslexia, and more. And I'm subsequently excited to tell you about their podcast, Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. They cover topics such as how to tell if your child needs an IEP, common myths about special education, and the difference between IEPs and 504 plans. I love how Understood Explains breaks down the overwhelm by unpacking an important topic each season and then drilling down further into key basics in each episode. Most episodes are between 10 to 15 minutes, and episodes are available in both English and Spanish. So fantastic, right? To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, your host, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you will come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Hello, friends. I'm very excited to bring you today's conversation. It is with a dear internet friend and fellow content creator who I don't see enough of in person, and her name is Megan Francis. You may know her from Mother of Reinvention with Megan Francis, in which she covers everything from health and hormones to pivoting your career and parenting bigger kids. She inspires moms to ask, what's next? And also, you may know her from The Mom Hour, her long-running podcast with Sarah Powers, which offers practical tips and real-life encouragement for moms who want to enjoy motherhood more and cut back on comparison, worry, and stress. Wouldn't that be all of us? Anyway, I have said on the show multiple times how pivotal Megan and Sarah were to this show being born. And also, I'm delighted that Megan is on the Substack train with Reinventing, in which she documents reinventing her life with creativity, purpose, and adventure. And finally, because I deeply appreciate how multidimensional we humans are, I will say that as a personal friend, Megan has a deliciously salty sense of humor that makes me burst into laughter. And really, everyone needs more friends like that. So welcome, Megan. Hello.
Hello, Christine. That was such a lovely introduction. I hadn't thought of myself as salty, but I will take it. You know, it's funny. I'm freckled and I have dimples. And for so long, people thought I was such a wholesome person because of that.
And the dimples do convey wholesome. They do.
Yes. And I have a lot of kids. So people also assumed that I was like Mormon or something like that, like that it was a religious thing. So then they would meet me and be like, what? This is not what I expected at all. So.
Yes. Yes. Well,
I hold it together in podcast land, but if you hang out with me in person, it's a different story.
Oh my gosh. It's the very best. It gives me life whenever we're connected. So Megan, I'm so excited about our conversation today because there are many things we can talk about. And in fact, we just recorded an episode for your Mother of Reinvention show. So I will link it whenever these things go live, we'll connect them. But today we're going to be talking specifically about what empty nesting looks like or fashioning an intentional runway for empty nesting. And so I'd love to just dive in and start with a little bit of baseline storytelling because you have many children, five of them to be exact, ranging in age from 14 to 25. So I'd be curious if you could share just kind of an overview of what parenthood looks like for you at present.
Yeah. So my two oldest are, Jacob is 25, Isaac is 23. They are out in the world doing their thing. But over the past several years have come and gone. So that's a relatively new, development for them to both be out. My middle son, Will, went off to college last year, and now I'm down to Clara, who is 14, and Owen, who is 17, under my roof. And I just got remarried like in May. Yes. So that has been a lot of change. And I will say that having a large family that's spread out, it's like the most anticlimactic journey to empty nesting ever. It's a slow, like, it's like a leaky drain or something. It's not like one, it's not like this intense period of time where like 4 years, you know, they're all out and now it's over. It's like it's been a slow retreat for a long time. And when my oldest graduated high school, that same year I got divorced. So I feel
like a lot of transition. Yeah.
It was a lot of transition. And I feel like those first few years were a rather chaotic experience of what an emptying nest could look like, as well as like my ability to be really present and notice it. It's now that I'm starting to really notice it. So, parenthood right now looks like I'm in a very normal looking family with two kids. Like I'm back to like having a nuclear family, but with only two kids instead of five. Mm-hmm. And it feels weirdly culturally normal. Mm-hmm. but I'm also very aware of the ticking clock all of a sudden.
Sure, sure. There was one thing we talked about in our other conversation together that I just wanted to flag here and ask you about, is because you had this realization that the shift and the difference at home really came when your middle one left, right? So can you say a little bit more about that and why?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, going from 5 to 4 isn't that big of a difference. Going from 4 to 3 isn't that big of a difference. Going from 3 to 2 felt like a big difference. Mm. And my middle son is an extrovert. He's a real leader in the family. He, you know, he kind of pulls people along into his hijinks. Constantly going, always had things, activities, friends, sometimes some friend drama. Like there was just a lot going on. And actually I had two of those personality types in my oldest and my middle, very strong personalities with a lot going on. And with that kind of removed, I feel like it's made some space for the quieter kids. My younger two are a little more, like when they're together, they're not quiet. They're obviously they banter and talk at each other. I can't even understand what they're saying half the time, but they're just a little bit of a more chill and introverted personality, both of them. So it's been interesting to be able to make space for that and see that maybe they had needs that were being a little talked over by the louder, older siblings, and like watching them kind of come into their own. That's been very interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because in the lane of our conversation about making that transition to an empty nest eventually, I'm just curious for these two quieter, a little more introverted kids that are at home, has there been anything in particular that's worked really well in terms of supporting them and the types of people they are?
What I'm finding really lovely, actually, is this new sort of blended family thing we have going on. My new husband has two kids, but they're both older and they're out of the house. So it's just the four of us. And we've both been able to devote a lot of time to just hanging out with these two kids who both love him. Like, I think my daughter maybe grudgingly, you know, which she wouldn't probably admit it, but my 17-year-old is very, like, he really wants to spend time with Eric, who is my husband. And there's just a lot of like hanging out, watching TV, listening to Owen talk about gaming. He's a very skilled gamer, and we don't understand that. We're not into that world, but just listening to him talk about it, absorbing. Clara is a freshman in her freshman year of high school. There's a lot of people drama that she likes to unload in a very over the top kind of a way. I don't know how else to put it. Uh-huh. It's like everything is very amplified in its importance. And I'm really loving having a partner in that. I have to say, it creates more, there's more absorption going on. Mm-hmm. There's like another person to kind of sit there and listen and not feel like I have to be a teenager, but like I get to be an adult, but I get to like be part of this teenage world, which has been great. And I think honestly, just in a way that was very hard for me to do when, as a single mom, I had to kind of keep all the balls in the air and had a lot of things going on and a lot of transitions happening and working a lot more than I really need to right now. I just didn't have the space. And now mm-hmm. I feel like I have the time and the space. So it's not a lot of doing. It's a lot of just being there and being available.
I love that.
Yeah. There's not much I'm doing. I'm mostly just sort of being a sponge and creating space for it. I'm really starting to see how important those dinners are, and getting the kids up a little earlier in the morning so we can all sit around the table, and Clara drinks coffee and Owen drinks tea and I drink tea, and we just sit and talk. And like those little times, mm-hmm. like those little dedicated times mean a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because I hadn't thought of all the overlaps, but the overlapping conversation between this conversation and the one we just recorded that will be on your show, the importance of white space and time, and it's everything, right? So yeah. I think that is one of the great gifts of your kids getting older and there just being a little more room to have those conversations is so important. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back with Megan to talk about friendships.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you struggle with boundaries and the general complexities of peopling? Relationships are necessary to our well-being, and some relationships are just, well, complicated. A good chunk of the work I have done in therapy centers on relationships, how to own my part of the story, how to let go of relationships that are toxic, and how to navigate challenging relationships in a way that doesn't drain me. And all of this work helps me show up better for myself and also as a partner, mom, friend, family member, and business owner. If you're thinking of starting therapy, check out BetterHelp. This online therapy platform was designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/edit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/edit. As you know, I value stories and the connection that the sharing of stories can bring so much. And if you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, check out StoryWorth. StoryWorth is all about celebrating and preserving stories. Every week, StoryWorth emails a loved one of your choosing a question prompt that you pick. For example, how did you decide when to have children? And what was your mom like when you were a child? Your loved one simply responds to the email with a story of any length. You will receive copies of these emails, and after 1 year, StoryWorth compiles the stories and any photos provided into a keepsake book. Funny enough, I was just chatting with a neighbor who told me that her mom gifted copies of her StoryWorth album to immediate family members, and literally everyone was crying, in a good, loving way. I loved this example because while yes, StoryWorth is a great gift between a parent and kid, in this case, it was a gift from sister to sister that then was shared across generations. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/edit. That's storyworth.com/edit to save $10 on your first purchase.
Okay, friends, we are back with Megan Francis. And Megan, I want to talk about friendships. So I'm curious if you experienced this with your kids, but I found that when my kids were very little, many of the relationships I formed were based on who they were hanging out with, which quite frankly wasn't always the best fit for the adults. So now that those lanes are separate, it's kind of a relief. And it also means that the onus is on me to cultivate relationships, to carve out time. I would love to hear your thoughts on this and on what recalibration looks like and being intentional about friendships as your nest empties.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I was where you are, you know, years ago, because my oldest were teens 10 years ago. So I was starting to look at that. My world was starting to kind of open up, and there was a lot of, hobbies that I was starting to pursue. I did community theater for a while. And that introduced me to people. I was on the radio for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I did a morning show, like a top 40 morning show where I was a co-host, and that introduced me to a lot of new people. And, it's interesting now. What's kind of actually happened is that it's retracted a bit COVID. I mean, that's like the story that it's universal. That friend group was maybe getting a little out of control, actually a little bigger than I could manage or wanted to manage.
Yeah.
I've actually been writing a Substack post that will be live by the time this episode airs, because I plan to publish it today, but about, like, for me, the end of FOMO, how my FOMO was so strong in my 20s and 30s. I mm-hmm. always felt like there was something out there I was missing. And that relief I almost had when everything kind of shut down and I didn't have to play in every sandbox anymore.
Mm.
It's been interesting to see on the other side of it, who's still there, like who's mm-hmm. still in my little gang. And it's a small but mighty group. It's a group that, like, I know I have a friend who, if I want to go kayaking, I have that friend. I have lots of acquaintances that I can say hello to, those soft connections. I think that's what they call them. The people that you would see at the grocery store, they're the same people. You might make a little small talk, but it's not, you're not going to get their number mm-hmm. and call them up. I have a lot of those, but I'm actually finding that I edited my friendships, not like in a mean or intentional way. I didn't break mm-hmm. up with anybody. They just sort of did edit. So it's almost like I had to go all in on meeting as many people as I could.
Yep.
And then I had to pull back a little bit so that I didn't drive myself into the ground running around town, going to every outing, every party. Every time I got an invitation, I am an Enneagram 2. I have a hard time telling people no.
Mm.
I have a hard time, as we talked about in the episode that we did from Mother of Reinvention, you and I both have a hard time identifying what we're feeling in the moment. And especially when I was like a newly single mom, if I had a text inviting me to something, the answer was yes, immediately. I didn't even think about whether I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was kind of exhausting myself. So I think you can really go to either extreme. There's people who never say yes to anything because it's easier to stay at home in your pajamas. And I can see how that happens. I actually had a friend, kind of a casual friend, but someone who, like, you know, came to my son's graduation party and was at my little bachelorette party, like that level of friend. Like, mm-hmm. she's not the person I'd call if something went really wrong, but she's a friend. And she texted me at one night at like 7:30 on a Friday and said, "Hey, I'm going to be going to, there's this brewery literally a mile from my house. I could practically see it from where mm-hmm. I'm at." And she was going and she said, "I would love for you to meet me there. I haven't seen you in a while." Okay, so here I am, Christine, in my pajamas. I've got my glass of wine.
Yeah, you and me both. 7:30 on Friday. Yeah, I'm nearly done.
I'm watching, I believe it's the Kennedy Center version of Company with Neil Patrick Harris. So it's like, this is not new. It's been around forever. But
it
was
on NPH. I mean, you can't say no to NPH.
And I was like, this is like the fourth time I've seen this performance. But I was like, you know what I'm going to do, though? That's how I'm spending my Friday night. And I thought, the last thing I want to do mm-hmm. is go. Like, it was so far down. But I thought, this is dumb. Like, I haven't seen this person in forever. I need to put on clothes, real pants, and go. So I went. And here's the really funny thing. I did put on real pants, but I forgot to put on a bra. So I get there and I had a beer and it was really fun. And there was a band and she's like, "We should get up and dance." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I don't even have a bra on. I don't think I can get up and dance." But it was like midlife lady dancing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a jam band and everyone was just kind of like standing there doing things with their arms. And I thought, when I went home, I thought, you know what? I'm glad I went.
Okay, good. So you felt like you made the right choice. Yeah.
Well, everything was free and swinging and like, I talked to some people. It was like, I was able to kind of overdose on social interaction. This is a very popular spot. I saw a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of small talk. And after 2 hours, I went home. I didn't drink too much because I didn't feel like I had to. My life was calm enough. I had enough going for me at home. I just went and kind of did the thing for a little bit and then I went home and it was great. I was glad I did it, but I feel like that break from that constant go, go, go
mm-hmm.
in the friend lane allowed me to separate out what is it I want to be doing in any social environment? Do I have to be the one? Do I have to stay till the end? No, I do not have to stay till the end. Do I have to go to everything? No, but I should probably go to something. So
yes.
Yes. And I also am very fortunate that I have my two very best friends from high school that I'm still best friends with. One of them married my brother, so she's in my family. And then I've got people like Sarah Powers and you and Asha that are my business besties, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't think you need a large group, but I think you have to be intentional about nurturing that small and mighty group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there needs to be like a bit of a scattershot, like a promiscuity, if you will, around taking out, like trying out new friends, just going out, join some dumb groups and say yes to invitations if you feel like you don't have enough. And then mm-hmm. at some point you might just be like, okay, that's enough now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. I mean, so many great points, but I was just thinking about your sort of resistance and then getting over that and having it work out well. Like sometimes we do have to get over a little resistance to you know, putting our pants on and
it's hard
and doing that. But it is really important. It is so interesting. Friendship is one of the topics that people are constantly asking about. And I will link up a really great episode, an interview I did with Melody Warnick, who is all about, you know, finding your relationships and finding your community. So I'll link that up if that's helpful for people who are looking for some new relationships because, yeah, the children, they leave eventually. They do. Well, speaking of new things, as you mentioned, you're newly married, which I was so excited about. I was like anxiously awaiting your photos as they after that weekend. So thanks for posting them in quick order. I recently read in one of your Substack essays, you referenced creating new traditions with your husband, which I imagine is key to any coupled humans going from a life centered on kids to each other. I would love if you could share about some of your new traditions, what they look like, why they're important, you know, and even if they're just little silly things, I think those are great too.
Well, you know, the funny thing about a tradition is, you don't know it's a tradition always until you've done it for a while. And what I've found that's now happening is that we're having to alter and modify some of the things we used to do to accommodate our new reality, which is now we went from being, we dated for a long time. We dated for 3 years and I've got my kids 50% of the time and his are grown and flown. So what the things like, for example, spending the first hour of the morning sitting quietly, him with his coffee, me with my tea, reading, maybe sitting out on the deck. That became a thing that we did. We didn't really talk about it. It just became a thing that we did. Same thing at night. We would spend an hour on the sofa. Sometimes we would just read quietly. Sometimes we would watch a show together. But now half the time, my kids are in this house, right? So we're probably not just going to like ignore them and like every single night. And be like, sorry, this is our quiet time. We're reading now. So we're having to come up with ways to incorporate the kids into what we want family life to look like. That's not about us being a couple. And it's not our kids. It's my kids. So that's just been interesting. It works well. I think that not like what we were doing was complicated and you can't involve the kids, but I'll give you an example. Last night, Owen, my 17-year-old, has been bugging us to watch this movie, Whiplash, which is about a talented drummer. I think you would love it. Have you seen this movie?
I haven't seen it. I'll have to look it up.
Okay. It's got J.K. Simmons. You know, he was like Yes. Okay. So he plays this sort of, well, very emotionally abusive band director, jazz band director that this young, talented drummer gets into. And Owen was, it's kind of interesting because Owen usually is very into anime and I have a really hard time watching anime. It makes me actually a little nauseated. Like it's so much movement and you know, like, I'm like, my old eyes can't handle this. But so he had been bugging us about it. And I said to Eric, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just am not in the mood to watch a 2-hour movie tonight. It's Thursday. It was Thursday at like the end of kind of a long week. I had gotten up really early that morning and I just didn't really want to, but I, in the interest of family traditions, said, okay, let's do it. And actually, it was a great movie, and I'm really glad I did it. And it just reminded me that, like, there's room for things that we're doing to change and grow and modify for our new reality. I think the holidays are going to be interesting. That, I think, is going to be where it could be my Waterloo in a way, because I have been very protective about my Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, basically since my oldest two kids were babies. I drew a firm line that I do not go anywhere on Christmas Day, and I only would go someplace like as a family Christmas Eve where we all go together and all leave, but not like, we don't hop around. We're not driving 2 hours away to go do Christmas with our in-laws or whatever. Right. It was like, we might go to church or we might like stop at my brother's house. He lives in town, but we weren't going to be all over the place, and drew that hard line. And, you know, people are getting older now, and I have another family. Like, I have new in-laws, and I have a stepdaughter and a stepson. And like, there may be ways I need to bend and where my kids need to compromise a little bit. We've also done every Christmas morning with my ex-husband since divorcing.
Wow. So okay.
Every Christmas morning. And that was something we really felt strongly about when we first divorced. Like, at first it was Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter. We want those to be the same as they always have been. And then pretty quickly it was just Christmas and Thanksgiving. And then within a couple of years, it was just Christmas. Because I think we just both realized we didn't actually want to spend that much time together on holidays anymore. But Christmas kind of stuck. And, you know, I'm not saying he's not welcome over here. I'm just not sure it's not going to feel the same. So, and my older kids now, you know, there's going to come a time when they don't come home on Christmas Day anymore. Because like I felt when I had a young family, I want to do my own thing. So
yes,
it's a great opportunity to change things, but it is in a period to a very long way to answer your very simple question. I apologize. It's in a time of flux. Let's just say.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing I'm hearing, which is a great thing, is that there can be a lot of fluidity, and even if you do it one way this year, I mean, it could be great or it could be a disaster, but then you take that data and you move forward. You know what I mean? So that's the good news. I mean, just as you said, you know, your time has evolved with your kids and the tradition with your ex has evolved. I mean, so will this. And so I think that's actually a really great thing, because I think the holidays especially can feel a bit fraught with having to do things a particular way. And we're sort of in that boat too, of just trying to figure out, okay, how do we do this and meet everybody's needs? And, you know, we're probably
including
not going to meet
yours.
We're probably not going to meet everyone's needs. In fact, I want to meet our needs first. So
it was kind of funny last year. And I didn't know that I was going to be getting married. We got engaged in April. It was a pretty short engagement. And then we just decided, for a lot of reasons, it made sense just to go ahead and get married. But so last Christmas, I did not know that I would be married and cohabitating with a new spouse next Christmas. And I bought myself a fake tree. The first artificial tree I've ever had. I resisted it pretty hard.
Oh, I'm a fan of the fake. Yeah.
But last year, I mean, I'm romantic about it. But last year, I found myself after Christmas doing a little, you know, like a little recap in my mind. And I thought, what was something that could have gone better? It was a really nice holiday. But I thought the tree stressed me out. Like, going to get it stressed me out. Getting it up stressed me out. Getting it out of the house afterwards stressed me out. Remembering to all of those things. It wasn't actually fun. I thought it would be, and it actually wasn't. And there was like a 40% off sale at Balsam Hill. They have really nice trees, and I bought one. So the funny thing is, now we each have a fake tree, and I don't know who's this. It's going to be dueling fake trees over here. But that felt like a little moment of like taking back my holiday power a little bit. You know, I can't force the kids to be into something they're not into anymore. And I don't have to like suffer just to keep things going. They've also been telling me for years that, like, you know, you guys don't have to spend so much. Don't get us so many gifts. And I never really feel like I go into the holiday thinking I'm overdoing it, but then it's two parents with some divorced parent guilt, I'm sure, in there, maybe trying to overcompensate a little bit. And it does end up kind of like every year, I'm like, how do we do that again? I feel mm-hmm. like we always say we're not going to, and then we do. And so the kids have even been telling me what they care about and don't care about. And mm-hmm. sometimes I just think they don't mean it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. they're wrong. I think that the fluidity you mentioned, it's also really important to remember wherever you've landed with your family, if your kids are older, like whatever traditions are working for you, whatever are the mainstays of the way your family does. It doesn't even just have to be the holiday, but whatever the mainstays are of the way your family does X didn't happen overnight. It mm-hmm. probably took a few years of trial and error.
Yeah.
And so anytime there's flux, whether it's because you remarried or your nest is slowly dwindling in size or whatever it is, like that's not going to happen overnight either. It's yeah. going to take some time. So mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. fluid.
Absolutely. Fluid. So interesting. Well, I want to pivot and talk about hobbies. I am very passionate about pursuing other interests, and there's an episode I'll link up in the notes called Cultivating Hobbies and Interests. And I would love to hear your thoughts on this. In that episode, I was noting especially the importance of identifying interests before one hits retirement. Yeah. I actually think that's one reason my dad struggled so much. And after he finished his business, because he didn't really have other things that going on. Yeah. But I think this topic is super relevant for the empty nest runway. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that. And, you know, maybe if you could share kind of what's lighting you up these days.
Yeah. One thing I want to say is that I think there's a real trap. And you mentioned this in that episode and also in the episode you and I did of Mother of Reinvention, that we feel like we have to justify every hobby we have by mm-hmm. monetizing it somehow, or even just professionalizing it. Like it's not good enough to do something and kind of suck at it. We have to be the best, and it has mm-hmm. to be Instagram worthy. And I am a big proponent of just doing whatever, whether you're any good or not, does not matter. It does not ever have to earn you a dollar. In fact, I think it's really healthy for it to not. So that's where I would start, is just say, like, it doesn't have to be professionalized or perfected, but it also doesn't have to last.
Yes. Yes.
You can do something. You can go take a weird class at the YMCA or at your local community center and then have that be it. Like you mm-hmm. never do it again. It's okay to dabble. And I feel like we've lost that a little bit. Like we feel like we have to be great at everything because there are resources out there that seem as though they would make it possible to be great at everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those 15-second reels, they make it look like yeah. everything should be really easy.
You know what's so funny? I was talking to Sarah Powers, and we were talking about YouTube, and I was like, man, I kind of forgot how great YouTube is, because it actually shows you how to do stuff, and it shows you that it's not a 15-second reel.
Yeah.
That it's, you might have to watch a whole 30-minute, you know, tutorial to learn how to, for example, my sister-in-law Jenna and I are going to be getting together this weekend to make wreaths. Now, the reason we got the idea to make a wreath is because we fashioned, well, I'm going to give Jenna most of the credit. She gets like, Jenna gets 70% of the credit and Sarah Powers gets 30% of the credit for my wedding bouquet, because okay. Sarah helped me realize that I could do my own flowers and actually sent me tutorials for how to build a Trader Joe's bouquet.
She did.
And I believe she actually made me a Google Doc with
links
to the specific flowers that I should get. So then I went to Trader Joe's on my way up north. We got married in the middle of nowhere, like in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. There was no Trader Joe's up there, so we had to stop on the way up. I bought the specific flowers that she recommended, plus some other ones that just caught my eye. I brought them up, and then Jenna, who's artistic, assembled the bouquet.
Oh, how lovely.
And it was gorgeous. Jenna and Sarah have a lot in common, too. So it was gorgeous. And as we were doing it, and we were making like the little table arrangements with the leftovers, because I way overbought, we were like, isn't this fun? It was something about floral arranging was so relaxing.
Yeah.
And then I got, so because I bought that artificial Christmas tree last year, I'm now getting their catalogs, and their fall catalog had all these gorgeous wreaths that were like $300. And I thought, mm-hmm. I really want a pretty wreath. I don't want to spend $300 on it. And then all of those things came together in my head. So mm-hmm. there was like the fact that the process of purchasing my own florals had been demystified thanks to Sarah Powers. The fact that like putting together the bouquet had been demystified thanks to Jenna. And also then I just went to YouTube and literally said, hey, YouTube, how can I make a wreath? I don't remember how I exactly searched it, but it was like making a wreath with stuff in my yard, mm-hmm, something mm-hmm. like that. And then I watched like a 30-minute tutorial where a woman did exactly that. And I was like, okay, this is all doable. I can do this. But all of those, if I had just said based on a, you know, a reel or something, like I want to be a professional wreath builder, I never would have gotten there. Like all those little pieces had to kind of come together. The mm-hmm. openness. Another example you and I talked about recently was getting into kind of herbal medicine and things. And I live on some acreage and my husband and I have been going out foraging for edible herbs and edible plants.
So cool.
And we just got one. The first time we went out, we literally were looking for one thing and then we found it. And then we're like, oh, but look at this. Oh, but look at that. And now we're doing it all the time and we're seeing things we didn't see before. So I guess in addition to being open to like kind of letting the world direct you into interests and hobbies, and not overthinking it and not over professionalizing it, but, you know, just learning as you go from people who are a couple steps ahead, mm-hmm. I would say starting really small.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is another great one.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love your point about dabbling and just being okay, letting it be an experiment, because yeah. I'm thinking about actually, we've had a little bit of an extracurricular transition over here, and Violet, after many years of playing soccer, has decided she doesn't want to do that. And so we have a lot of open space, and I've been thinking yeah. about maybe pottery classes and even, you know, trying it myself. And I love the idea of going into that with a outlook of, okay, let's just try. And this could be awesome or it could be a disaster. And either way is fine. Either way is information.
And it's not wasted time. I mean, I did, when my kids were like not middle-aged, but you know what I mean? Like not little kids and not big kids and teenagers. There was about a 3-year window where I did a lot of community theater. It was kind of my outlet. Mm-hmm. I did it at a very family-friendly theater where I was able to take my kids along sometimes and things like that. And I did a lot of shows. I want to say I did, gosh, maybe 10 mm-hmm. in 3 years, something crazy like that. I directed some children's theater too. It worked really well for the time of life I was in then, but the last show I did was 2018 and I don't really see myself going back anytime soon. Does that mean I'll never do it again? Well, mm-hmm. no, I mean, never's forever. And like, you know, life is long, but right now I don't want to spend that much time in the theater. I don't want to be up that late, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't, it's too late for me. I don't want to be at a rehearsal till 10 o'clock. I don't want to give up my weekends. So I'm just mm-hmm. not doing it right now. Mm-hmm. And that is going to mean that there are certain things I miss out on, opportunities. But you get, you know, it's so interesting. Theater is such an interesting like microcosm of what's going on throughout our lives, because I used to feel a lot of anxiety. Like if I don't stay engaged in it now, I'm gonna age out of mm-hmm. being able to play certain parts. And now I'm like, well, of course I am. I can't do all of it. So I've already aged out of like all the ingenue roles. And then I aged out of all the like single 30s, you know, mm-hmm, young mm-hmm. women roles. And at some point I'll age out of the mom roles mm-hmm. and that's okay. I can't do them all. That's mm-hmm. not a possibility. So it would have to be a pretty big wow, like a pretty big, this is one you absolutely must drop everything and do.
Right.
And that hasn't happened. So right. I'm happily spending my weekends tromping around on the property looking for herbs to concoct.
Oh, teas wonderful. Well, I expect you to start texting me your herb findings, because now I'm really curious what you're coming up with. All right, Megan, we are going to take a quick break and then we're going to talk about work and identity.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, friends. We are back with the wonderful Megan Francis. And Megan, let's talk about work and identity. So many parents I talk to, if they're approaching or are in the emptiness zone, they're thinking about what's next for themselves. And I know this is something you reflect on a lot. So I would love to hear your thoughts on how to engage in this process of figuring out what's next. I mean, ideally from a place, maybe partially at least, of joy and anticipation instead of fear and worry. Is that possible?
I think we hold them both. We hold space for both. And fear and worry maybe the more accurate or like the healthier way to frame that is like uncertainty, because that won't go away. Like we're always going to be a little uncertain about what's next. But there can be some joy in that. That's where the anticipation comes from, right? We knew exactly everything that was going to happen. It would be kind of boring. In my community, I hear from moms on both ends of the spectrum, from women who've really opted out of the workforce or been involved in it kind of in a really kid-centric way. Like maybe they worked for their kids' schools or always arranged their work lives around their kids. And now they're like, okay, well, I don't want to do that anymore, but literally have no idea, feel like they have no skills. I think that there's processes that they can go through that I'm probably not qualified to walk them through. But I think that, Christine, you've done some work in this area around like resume building and things like that that I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about. But I'm going to address the other end of the spectrum, people who've been doing what they've been doing because they've been doing it. Not necessarily, which I mean, they're engaging with the working world in some way, and they're identifying with the working world in the way they've been existing in it. And now they're like, gosh, like now that I have time to think about this, is this even what I want? Is this what I want to be doing? Do I want to chuck it all and like, I don't know, start a vineyard or become an herbalist or whatever that is? Like, where do I even start? And I mean, I feel like this is a great opportunity to start just taking those little baby steps so that when you truly do have the empty nest or when you've kind of had time to ease into the empty nest, you know what's next. I mean, like people aren't retiring the way they used to at like 62, 65. And I don't want to. I want to be engaged in meaningful work well into my 70s, like maybe 80s and beyond. I have no idea what that's going to look like. So I am definitely doing some some soul searching there myself, Christine. And I think where I'm coming up with two realizations. One is something that you mentioned in the episode that we recorded for Mother of Reinvention, where like, let the data help you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't just guess how much money I'm going to need to retire. Like, that's mm-hmm. not going to work. My brain is not doing that compound interest math on its own.
Mine either.
Like, especially in a world of gig work and contract work and self-employment, my brain can't automatically say, oh, okay, well, gosh, this is my hourly rate. And if I was able to stay busy at this hourly rate, then I can retire at 75 with this much money. That's not like my brain can't do that math.
Mm-hmm.
And it never looks that clean either, because there's all this stuff we're doing that's not actually billable at that hourly rate, you know, and mm-hmm. we're doing it because we love it and it kind of fits with what like our overall mission, but maybe it's actually not earning us much or anything. So I feel like a real look at the numbers is so helpful. I did a few sessions last spring with a company called Fearless Finance. They actually are a sponsor of the Mom Hour. I will just disclose that. But it was like a financial planner who was so practical. And she was mm-hmm. just like, hey, here's what you need to bring in if you want this. Like, it was just knowing the facts helped me. It was demystifying, but it helped me not catastrophize or its ugly cousin, like over optimisticize, like mm-hmm. where you think it'll all just work out. Like those two things they're opposite ends of the same coin. And I think if you're a little bit afraid of really digging into the money, you can go in either direction.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I know what we were talking about is more the identity piece around work, but I think if the money thing cannot be,
of course,
it's really hard to have an honest and open-hearted conversation with yourself about how you want to show up in the work world. If you're kind of secretly thinking maybe it won't make you enough money to live and you'll be eating cat food.
Of course. Yes. And also, I mean, it's a whole other conversation, but there is the issue if you have been out of the workforce, the traditional workforce for some number of years, due to choices, household choices, then that's a whole other ball of wax that's going to complicate things. So just wanted to note that.
Yeah. So I think data is a good place to start. And I think data and dabbling, like let the world be your playground a little bit. Don't feel like this is me giving advice that I am really giving to myself, but I will have an interest. And the next thing I think is that's got to be it. Like, that's got to be the thing that I'm going to mm-hmm. take to this next level. And there's a place for that dreaming and that big vision. I love being that kind of person, but there's also a place at which then I can't stay with anything long enough to see it, to realize it fully.
Mm-hmm.
And
so interesting. Yeah.
It may end up looking like the rest of my life is punctuated by 5-year careers. And I think that would be amazing. Like building on all of what I have learned and, you know, the skills I've cultivated, the relationships I've built over the last 20 some years of being in the world I'm in, it could spin that off into multiple lucrative things that don't have to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where
my mind
is.
It does. Yeah. And I just want to underscore again how fun this theme of dabbling, like how great it is, because, and relate it back to the fact that, you know, my listeners know that I made this big leap into uncertainty halfway through the year. And at the beginning of the year, when I was doing that, when I was thinking about it and was terrified out of my mind and catastrophizing about being homeless and wrestling with all sorts of issues, I thought, okay, I've got to find a retainer job. I've got to find something steady. I need a lot of structure. And then as that time was approaching, as the jump was approaching, I'm like, nope, I don't want to be tethered to anything right now.
Yeah.
I need to be able to pick my projects. And that way, you know, short-term projects, that way, if I don't like the people I'm working with, or I don't like the project, the way it's turning out, I can just leave. So it was so interesting to move from a place of, yes, I want stability and a lot of structure to, okay, no, I actually just want to be able to dabble. Like it was very freeing, and it's felt very freeing to be in that space.
I think it's also helpful to give ourselves time to mentally play something out all the way. So, and the episode that we did for Mother of Reinvention, we talked a little bit about that muscle memory where things have been a certain way for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so you forget that they're changing. So, for example, I really was allergic to out of the home work mm-hmm. for a long time because it mm-hmm. just didn't work with my family. I wanted to be available. I didn't want to be running around all the time. And so I was anything that would require me to be in an office. I, except for like the first year after I was divorced, that was the 1 year I was doing an office job, but really have not in a very long time. And so I both have to remind myself that that's not my reality anymore. I could go work in an office. I could. That maybe, especially when all of my kids are out of the house, there might be something really wonderful about
yes.
leaving home and going to an office and having what feels like that, you know, grown up boss lady kind of job. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I can't fall into magical thinking where I believe I'm going to suddenly become a totally different person just because my kids aren't home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the things that I don't like, that I didn't like about office work when I was doing it, I'm probably still not going to like in later identity, like later versions yes. of myself.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to give myself time to play things out and not get too caught up in like the excitement over a possibility or the fear that if I don't take it, there won't be another opportunity that comes along.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Really, really good advice. Really good advice. Well, Megan, I have one more question for you, and this is our closer. And at the end of each show, I ask my guests to share what is called your next edit. You might remember. It's a super actionable tip that listeners can consider doing right away after they finish listening. So in the context of our conversation today about empty nest prep and evaluation and dabbling and everything else, I would love for you to share your next edit for this episode.
Well, I thought long and hard about this, Christine, because I think, again, there are people on one end of the spectrum who literally can't think of anything they might want to do next. And then there's people on the other end, like me and possibly you, who can't stop thinking about things we might want to do next. And I feel like a pen and paper is the place to start. And mm-hmm. I feel like if you're regardless of what end of the spectrum you're on, go back to when you were a little kid. I mean, think back to when, before life got to you, you know, mm-hmm. before you started to try to shape what you wanted to do around other people's expectations. What lit you up? Was it, for me, it was like Little House on the Prairie stuff. Okay, cool. Let's see. What is the grown-up version of that now? How can that show up in my life now? And then I think what you'll find is that if you're like a Christine and a Megan, now you edit. Now you have to say, what's there room for? What's one thing I can choose and find some actionable way to introduce this into my life without making it into a business,
mm-hmm.
without taking it to the nth degree? Just don't overthink it. Just get started. Watch the YouTube video. But if you're maybe more on the side where it's like you're not in the habit of thinking about yourself that way, or maybe you're just not, you're more of that, like, I just do the thing in front of me person, and you're not thinking bigger, you might have to push yourself a little bit. You might just have to say, I'm going to do this even if I think it's not going anywhere. I'm just going to take the next opportunity that comes in front of me. Mm-hmm. But I think having a list that you start with and just writing down all the things you haven't got around to yet or that have caught your eye, a bulletin board poster flyer, you know, about a class that maybe you looked at twice.
Mm-hmm.
That's notable. Write that down. And then either add or edit, depending on where you're at with that list. And for me, it's going to be moving a lot of things off the do now list to the do later or yeah. never do list.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, Megan, this was such a joy to chat with you twice today. I mean, what is this life?
Gosh,
it's so treat. Good. It's so good. And thank you again for taking the time and for sharing your thoughts and just for being a fantastic human who I love very much. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. This has been lovely, Christine.
Wonderful. Okay, friends, you'll find the show notes for this episode, including links to resources and related episodes at edityourlifeshow.com. As ever, I would love to hear your thoughts and questions. Come say hello on Instagram or Facebook at edityourlifeshow or send an email to edityourlifeshow@gmail.com. I would also be grateful if you would drop Edit Your Life a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a pod-loving friend about the show. Thanks for listening.
Oh, hey, everybody. everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.